There are some things I would never do on Halloween. I would never smash a carved pumpkin. I know how that feels because last year, somebody swiped both pumpkins off our front porch and smashed them all over the road. This year, me and Kenny got smart. We put our pumpkins in the window where they'll be safe. Also, I would never mess around with little kids trying to steal their loot. That's mean. But nothing is too mean for Mr. Machinist, which is why Tracy and I plan to crack eggs in his mailbox. He deserves it. He won't give to UNICEF, and if ever there was a person who'd put razor blades in apples, it's him. I'm not allowed to eat much of anything I collect trick-or-treating, especially apples. Mrs. Sandmeyer makes them all into applesauce. So far, she's never found a razor blade, but my mother says there are crazy people all over and she isn't taking any chances. Mr. Machinist's mailbox is next to his driveway, by the side of the street. It says, Machinist, in small, stenciled letters. Tracy took out an egg and handed it to me. Ready for action? I looked around, sure that Mr. Machinist was lurking behind a tree, just waiting to jump out and snap my picture. But I didn't see anything, so I said, I guess so. Tracy took another egg out of her bag and held it herself. You go first, she told me. I put my shopping bag and sword on the ground. Then I opened Mr. Machinist's mailbox. It squeaked. Go ahead, Tracy whispered. Do it. I expected a flashbulb to pop in my face as I cracked the egg and dumped it inside. The yolk broke and dripped all over. Now you go, I told Tracy. Tracy cracked her egg and threw it inside the box, too. We looked at each other, then reached for two more eggs and did the same thing again. When we came to the last eggs, we didn't bother cracking them first. We just tossed them into the mailbox, shell and all. After that, we picked up our things and ran as fast as we could. When we were far enough away, we started to laugh. We did it, I said. We really did it. And they were rotten, Tracy said. Did you get a whiff? Yeah, they were just great. Won't he be surprised tomorrow when he reaches in for his mail and comes out with a handful of raw, rotten eggs? Oh, Mr. Machinist, Tracy sang, you deserve it. After that, we went trick-or-treating. We stopped at every house in Hidden Valley. At Wendy's, we got two miniature Hershey bars and a handful of UNICEF pennies. At Caroline's, we each got a quarter for UNICEF and a napkin full of chicken corn. At Robbie Winter's, his mother invited us inside while she wrote a $1 check for each of us to give to UNICEF. I never got a check before, Tracy said when we were outside again. Me neither, but I think it's neat. So do I. When we got to Linda Fisher's house, Tracy asked, do you want to ring her bell? No, let's do her trees instead. Good idea, Tracy said. I whipped out the roll of toilet paper, and me and Tracy wound it all around the Fisher's trees. Then we ran up and down the front walk, squirting pink silly string on all the bushes. I was having the best time. I wished Halloween came more than once a year. I shook the can and aimed it at the hedge right next to the house. A person gets what she deserves, I sang. But when I pushed the button, nothing came out of the can. It's empty, I told Tracy. So's mine, she said. We raced down the driveway. Tracy had a piece of blue chalk with her, and she snapped it in half, and both of us laughed like crazy as we wrote, Blubber lives here, all over the street. Wendy and Caroline came along then, shining their flashlights in our faces. Hey, I said, turn those things off. Who are you? Wendy asked. Who do you think? It's me, Jill. Prove it, Wendy said. I took off my hat and pillowcase. Oh, it really is you, Wendy said. Is that Tracy? Naturally. We smashed 6 pumpkins, Caroline said. I don't think it's fair to smash pumpkins, I said. Fair or not fair, it was great fun, Wendy told me. Yeah, Caroline said. I'll bet you two didn't have such a good time. We did too. We had a better time, I said. Doing what? Wendy asked. Me and Tracy put 6 eggs in Mr. Machinist's mailbox. You did not, Wendy said. We did too.
I don't believe you.
We can prove it, can't we, Tracy?
Yeah, we'll show you.
Wait a second. I've got to get my pillowcase on straight, I said. As I was adjusting it, I looked up, and there was Linda in an upstairs window watching everything.
Hey, there's Blubber!
What a chicken, Caroline said. Inside on Halloween night.
Come on, Tracy said. Let's get out of here.
We raced to Mr. Machinist's house, and when we got there, I pulled his mailbox open while Tracy lit it with her flashlight.
Well, I said, there's the evidence.
You really did it, Wendy sounded surprised.
We told you, I said.
Suddenly a man jumped out from behind a tree. Hold it right there, he called.
Run,
Wendy hollered, and she and Caroline took off in one direction while me and Tracy ran in the other.
Don't look back, Tracy said, breathing hard. He's got a camera.
And a hose, I told her as the water hit me. When I got home, I sneaked in the back door and ran for my bedroom, where I changed into my robe. Then I scooped up the pile of wet clothes from the floor and carried it to the laundry room. I tossed everything into the dryer. Just as I was about to turn it on, my mother walked in.
Oh, hi, honey. Did you have fun?
Yes, I said. Lots.
I didn't know it was raining out.
It's not.
Then how come your clothes are all in the dryer and your hair is all wet?
Oh, that, I said, touching my head. Or shouldn't I ask?
I really wish you wouldn't, I told Mom.
She smiled and shook her head.
Then we went into her bathroom, and she dried my hair with her blow dryer.
Chapter 6. The Worms Crawl In, The Worms Crawl Out. On Friday mornings, Miss Rothbell, the music teacher, comes to our classroom. She is tall and skinny with two circles of rouge on her cheeks, hair that is practically blue, and fingernails like Dracula. Next to her, Mrs. Minish looks like Miss America. I don't know if Miss Rothbell has just one dress or a lot of dresses exactly alike, but she always looks the same. And every time I pass her in the hall, instead of saying hello, Miss Rothbell blows her pitch pipe at me.
Today, she said, we will continue where we left off with lullabies. Remember, you're going to sing at assembly next week, and I want a perfect performance. So listen carefully.
She blew into her pitch pipe, then tuned herself up by humming one note until she was satisfied. Her voice is like an opera singer's, but it cracks on the high notes.
Sweet and low, sweet and low,
Miss Rothbell sang, walking around the room. When she came to Robbie Winters, she gave his ear a tug, and he sat up straight and tall. Then she tapped Irwin on the head with her ballpoint pen, and he put away his comic.
Low, low, breathe and blow.
I folded my hands on my desk as Miss Rothbell came closer to me.
Sleep, my little one, sleep, my little one.
It's very hard to keep a straight face when Miss Rothbell is singing, especially when she's singing sweet and low and comes to the line about mother's breast. She always trills the brr. I held my breath until Miss Rothbell passed my desk. When she finished her song, she was right next to Wendy.
Wendy, can you tell me what was coming out of my mouth as I sang?
Out of your mouth? Wendy asked.
That's right, Miss Rothbell told her.
Well, it was, words?
No, 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 Miss Rothbell said.
Wendy was surprised. She can always give teachers the answers they want. Miss Rothbell moved on.
Do you know, Caroline? Was it sound?
Wrong, Miss Rothbell said, turning. Donna Davidson, can you tell me?
It was a song, Donna said.
Really, Donna, we all know that.
Miss Rothbell looked around.
Linda Fisher, do you know what was coming out of my mouth as I sang to the class?
Linda didn't say anything.
Well, Linda,
Miss Rothbell said.
I think it was air, Linda finally told her. Either that or breath.
Miss Rothbell walked over to Linda's desk.
That was not the correct answer. Weren't you paying attention?
She pulled a few strands of Linda's hair. A loud noise came out of Linda then. At first I wasn't sure what it was, but then the smell hit me and I knew. I wondered if she'd had sauerkraut for breakfast, because that happens to Kenny whenever he eats it. Miss Rothbell made a face and stepped away. I bit my lip to keep from laughing. With Mrs. Minish, you can laugh out loud and nothing really bad happens. She threatens to send us to Mr. Nichols' office, but she never does. With Miss Rothbell, you don't laugh, no matter what. She walked up and down the aisles until she stopped at my desk.
You're smiling, she said.
I am?
You are.
I don't think so, Miss Rothbell, I said.
We'll see if you've been paying attention. Suppose you tell me the answer to my question.
I had no idea what Miss Rothbell wanted me to say. There was just one thing left that could have been coming out of her mouth as she sang, so I said,
it was spit.
What? Miss Rothbell glared at me.
I mean, it was saliva, I told her.
Miss Rothbell banged her fist on my desk.
That was a very rude thing to say. You can sit in the corner for the rest of the period.
I pressed my lips together and felt my face turn hot as I carried my chair to the front of the room. I sat down facing the blackboard. Damn that blubber, I thought. It's all her fault. She's the one who made me smile with her disgusting smell. Miss Rothbell never would have called on me if I hadn't been smiling. Blubber's the one who should be sitting in the corner. I'd like to tell that to Miss Rothbell, I really would. Talk about unfair. At the end of music period, Robbie Winters called out,
Miss Rothbell? Miss Rothbell?
What is it? She asked.
You never told us what was coming out of your mouth when you sang.
That's right, Miss Rothbell said. I didn't.
What was it? Robbie asked.
It was melody, Miss Rothbell said.
Then she spelled it.
M-E-L-O-D-Y. And every one of you should have known.
She blew her pitch pipe at us and walked out of the room. At 11, Mr. Kubek, the custodian, delivers our lunch milk. He leaves it outside the classroom door in the hall. When I see it standing there, my stomach growls, and I start thinking about my peanut butter sandwich sitting inside my stuffy old locker getting soggy. By lunchtime, the milk is warm. I think it's sour, too. I've told my mother to report that to the Board of Health. We'll be able to buy cold milk next year when the school gym is converted into a part-time cafeteria. Until then, we have to suffer through lunch in our classrooms. At noon, Mrs. Minish leaves the room. She goes out to lunch every day. All the teachers do. It makes me mad to think of them sitting in some nice restaurant eating hamburgers and French fries while I have to sit at my desk drinking sour milk. As soon as Mrs. Minish is gone, we all move our desks around. I push mine next to Wendy's. So does Caroline. Sometimes Donna Davidson joins us, and other times she sits across the room with Lori, which is fine with me. I can't stand hearing her horse stories. Linda Fisher eats by herself. I watched as she unpacked her lunch and spread it out across her desk. She had a sandwich, a pack of Hostess cupcakes, and a big red apple.
You're going to turn into a real whale if you keep eating like that, Wendy told her.
Just shut up, Linda said, more to her sandwich than to Wendy.
Well, listen to that, I said. Blubber told Wendy to shut up. Can you imagine?
Some people don't know how to talk nice, Caroline said.
Didn't your mother teach you any manners, Blubber? Wendy asked.
I don't think so, I said. Otherwise, Blubber wouldn't chew with her mouth open.
Oh, yes, Wendy said. I noticed that, too. She must want us to see that she has an egg salad sandwich.
On whole wheat bread, Caroline added.
And how lovely it looks all chewed up in her mouth, I said.
I guess that's why she decided to report on the whale. She has a lot in common with them. I was beginning to enjoy myself.
Blub, blub, blub,
Wendy made this funny noise. Linda took her cupcakes and stuffed them back into her lunch bag. She stood up and headed for the trash basket, but Wendy stopped her before she could throw anything away.
You can't waste those beautiful cupcakes, Blubber.
I'll take them, Robbie Winters called. Wendy grabbed the bag out of Linda's hand, took out the package of cupcakes, and threw it across the room to Robbie. He tossed it to Bill, who passed it to Michael. Michael ate one. The other cupcake was squashed by that time, but Irwin stuffed it into his mouth anyway. Linda went back to her desk. Wendy followed her.
Oh, look! Blubber has a shiny red apple!
She held it up for the class to see. Then she put the apple on top of her head and paraded around the room. Michael stood on his desk and yelled, I'm William Tell.
Who's he? Lori asked.
The guy who shot the apple off his kid's head, dummy. Michael pretended to pull back his bow and aim an arrow at Wendy's head.
Help! Oh, help!
Wendy cried, racing around the room, holding the apple on her head with one hand.
Help is on the way,
I called, taking off my shoe and throwing it at Michael. It hit him in the leg. He picked it up and ran to the window.
You wouldn't, I yelled.
As soon as I said that, Michael raised the window and tossed out my shoe. It landed in the bushes.
You jerk, you absolute idiot!
I'll fix him, Jill, Wendy called, firing the apple at Michael. It missed him and crashed against the blackboard. Bruce picked it up, polished it off on his shirt, then took a bite. Donna pointed at him and chanted,
He ate the poison apple. He ate the poison apple.
Oh! Bruce made this gurgling noise, clutched his stomach, and dropped to the floor. He rolled over and played dead while the rest of us circled around him singing,
The worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They eat your guts and they spit them out.
It's much too noisy in here. Mrs. Horvath stood in our doorway with her hands on her hips. She's in charge of us during lunch. She's called a lunch teacher, but really she's more like a policewoman, patrolling the halls and sticking her head in and out of classrooms. We shut up in a hurry and scrambled back to our desks.
What is that?
She asked, spying the apple on the floor. Nobody answered.
To whom does this apple belong?
We all looked at Linda.
Well?
Mrs. Horvath said.
It's mine, Linda told her in a very weak voice.
Food does not belong on the floor, Mrs. Horvath shouted.
I know, Linda said.
Then why is it there?
Linda didn't say anything.
Do you want me to report you to Mr. Nichols?
No.
Then pick up that apple this instant!
Linda hurried to the front of the room, picked up the apple and dumped it into the trash basket.
That's better, Mrs. Horvath said. Now get into your jackets and go outside.
As long as it isn't raining, we go to the playground after lunch. Rainy days are bad because we have to spend all of lunch hour in our classroom, and that is just so boring. Even though Mrs. Minish unlocks the supply closet and hands out extra vanilla drawing paper. I prayed that Mrs. Horvath wouldn't notice I was wearing just one shoe, and all the way down the hall, I walked with my sock foot in front of my shoe foot. Outside, instead of jumping rope like usual, I hunted in the bushes for my shoe. As soon as Tracy heard what happened, she came over to help. When we finally found it, it was time to go back to class.
Chapter 7. Doesn't it stick to the roof of your mouth?
My mother has decided to give up cigarettes. She says if I have enough willpower to stop biting my nails, then she should have enough to stop smoking. I'm very proud of her. Dad says we've got to encourage Mom, so Kenny gives her all the bubble gum from his baseball cards. Mom can blow the biggest bubbles I've ever seen. She has to keep her mouth busy so she won't crave cigarettes, which is why she's taken up chewing. I know how she feels, only with me, instead of chewing, I wiggle my loose tooth. On Sunday night, Mom reminded me that I still have nothing to wear to Warren Winkler's bar mitzvah, and it's just 2 weeks away. His father lived next door to my father when they were boys. We don't see the Winklers very often, just once or twice a year, but that is more than enough for me.
Warren is such a creep. His mother is always making jokes about how me and Warren will like each other a lot more when we grow up, which proves that Mrs. Winkler doesn't know anything.
"Do I really have to go?" I asked my mother.
"Yes," Mom said, trying to scrape the bubblegum off her chin.
"You need alcohol for that," I told her.
"Oh, thanks." We went into the bathroom, and I watched Mom clean off her face.
"I think I'll wear a long dress," I said. "Tracy went to a bar mitzvah last year, and she wore one. Her mother made it for her. It's beautiful. Maybe she'd lend it to me."
"That's ridiculous," Mom said.
"What is?" I asked. "Wearing a long dress or borrowing Tracy's?"
"Both."
"Then what am I going to wear?"
"I'll look for something this week."
"No ruffles or anything like that."
"Don't worry. I'll get a very simple dress."
"I hope so," I said.
We always get off to a slow start on Monday mornings because Mrs. Minish has to collect our milk money for the week. I've noticed that she isn't so fast when it comes to arithmetic. If she didn't pay so much attention to thinking the problem through, like it says in our book, she could probably do better. While Mrs. Minish was counting, Robbie Winters came over to my desk, holding his hands out like some kind of zombie. He had a pin stuck through the skin of every finger. I used to think it was very brave of him to do that, but when I tried it myself, I found out it's easy. It doesn't even hurt. Last time I did it, Mrs. Sandmeyer caught me and made me soak my fingers in Epsom salt for 2 hours.
"Robbie, you are gruesome," I told him as he pushed his pin fingers in my face. As soon as he saw that he couldn't get anywhere with me, he went over to Linda Fisher. She screamed. Mrs. Minish looked up.
"What's going on?"
"It's Robbie," Linda said. "He's got pins in his fingers."
"Take them out, Robbie," Mrs. Minish said, "right now."
"But they feel nice," Robbie told her.
"Take them out."
"Yes, Mrs. Minish."
When she was finished with the milk money, Mrs. Minish announced that we would have a social studies test on Wednesday on the Explorers. I get them all mixed up. I can never remember which one is DeVaca and which one is DeSoto and who discovered what. At lunchtime, Wendy and Caroline traded sandwiches. Wendy loves salami, and Caroline's favorite is tuna. I had my usual peanut butter.
"Don't you get sick of the same old thing day after day?" Wendy asked.
"Nope."
"Doesn't it stick to the roof of your mouth?" Caroline said.
"If it does, I just work it off with my tongue."
"It's good you're so skinny," Caroline told me. "Peanut butter's fattening."
"Jill doesn't have to worry," Wendy said.
"Not like some people."
We all looked over at Linda. She had her lunch spread out on her desk. 2 pieces of celery, 1 slice of yellow cheese, and a package of saltine crackers.
"Hey," I said, "Blubber's on a diet."
"Is that right?" Wendy asked.
"Yes," Linda said. "I'm going to lose 10 pounds, and then you won't be able to call me that name anymore."
"What name?" Wendy said, and we all giggled.
"You know.
Say it."
"No, I don't have to."
Wendy got up and went over to Linda's desk. She made a fist at her.
"Say it."
"Blubber," Linda said, very low.
"Louder."
"Blubber," she said in her regular voice. Caroline was laughing like a hyena. I've never heard a hyena laugh, but I just know it would sound like Caroline. I think she's really stupid sometimes.
"Now say, 'My name will always be Blubber,'" Wendy told Linda.
"No, because it won't."
"Say it,"
Wendy told her, and she didn't look like she was fooling around anymore. I sat on the edge of my seat, not moving.
"My name will always be Blubber," Linda said. There were tears in her eyes.
"And don't you forget it," Wendy said, "because even if you weigh 50 pounds, you'll still be a smelly whale." That night after my bath, I went to my parents' room. Mom was stretched out reading a book. I did a flying leap onto her bed and lay down next to her. "You're sleepy, aren't you?" she asked, playing with my hair.
"A little."
"You should go to bed."
"In a minute."
"Okay."
"Mom?"
"Hmm?"
"Remember that time that sixth grader called Tracy a chink?"
"I remember," Mom said.
"And how she socked him right in the nose and he never bothered her again?"
"Uh-huh."
"Well, that's what I'd do if somebody called me a name."
"I wouldn't," Mom said.
"Well, how come?"
"Because it makes more sense to just laugh it off."
"I never thought of that. A person who can laugh at herself will be respected," Mom said.
"Always?"
"Usually."
"Well, what makes you ask, anyway?"
"Nothing special, just this girl in our class who lets everybody walk all over her. She really looks for it."
"You should try putting yourself in her place."
"I could never be in her place."
"Don't be too sure," Mom said, as she took off her reading glasses and slid them into their case.
"I think I will go to bed now," I said, leaning over for my kiss.
Chapter 8. Pass It On. On Wednesday morning, we had our social studies test on the explorers. It was all matching and multiple choice questions. Mrs. Minish handed back the corrected test papers right after lunch. I got a C. I knew I'd forget which one was DeVaca and which one was DeSoto, and I did. I also goofed up Cortez and Mexico. But what really got me sore was that Wendy and Caroline both got A's, and I saw Caroline copy all the answers off Wendy. Sometimes I wish Mrs. Minish would wake up. Miss Rothbell sent for us at 1:15, so we'd have time to rehearse before assembly. She made us stand in Cy's place on the stage. I wound up between Rochelle, who was a new girl, and Linda, with Wendy right behind me. All during rehearsal, Wendy kept giving me little pokes and pinches, trying to make me laugh, but I kept a straight face the whole time. We practiced singing each of our lullabies twice. Miss Rothbell seemed satisfied and went down to talk to Mr. Vandenberg. He always plays the piano for assemblies. I wish he'd taught music instead of Miss Rothbell. He has this funny mustache that he's always twirling, and he loves to tell jokes. As soon as Miss Rothbell was gone, Wendy leaned close and whispered, "Nobody sings breast but blubber. Pass it on." I whispered that to Rochelle, and she whispered it to Donna, who was on her other side. Then Mr. Vandenberg started playing a march, and we watched as all the other classes filed into the auditorium. When everyone was settled, Miss Rothbell blew her pitch pipe at us, and we hummed the opening note of Brahms' lullaby. We sang two more songs before we got to Sweet and Low. The way Miss Rothbell conducted us, you'd have thought she was leading some famous symphony. In the second verse of Sweet and Low, when we came to the line that goes, "Rest, rest on mother's breast," all of us mouthed the word breast except Linda. She sang it loud and clear with a trill on the brrr, the way Miss Rothbell does. It was like a one-word solo. The rest of us came back in on the next word, but by then, most of the kids in the audience were laughing so hard no one could hear us sing. Linda turned absolutely purple. I might have cracked up right on stage, except for my loose tooth, because all of a sudden it wasn't there anymore. It didn't fall out of my mouth, but I could feel it rolling around on my tongue. I didn't know what to do. I was afraid if I let it stay in my mouth, I would swallow it, so I spit it into my hand and stuck my tongue in the space where my tooth used to be. I tasted blood. After the assembly, Miss Rothbell made an announcement to our class. "Everyone except Linda will stay after school tomorrow. And if this ever happens again, you will all fail music." I knew she'd say something like that. I showed Tracy my tooth on the way home from school. "It's neat," she said. "How much do you think it's worth?"
"I'm not sure," I told her. "Last time I got a quarter."
"If I were you, I'd try for more. We haven't got that many baby teeth left."
"I'll try," I said. I didn't know which to tell my parents first, that I have to stay after school tomorrow or that I lost my tooth. I decided on the tooth. I handed it to my father.
"Very nice," he said, inspecting it. He passed it to Mom. Don't forget to put it under your pillow, she said.
I won't.
Mom handed the tooth back to me.
I went shopping at lunchtime, she said. I found the bar mitzvah dress. It's in a box on my bed.
I hope I like it, I said. I hope it fits.
The dress turned out to be a short knitted thing, with tiny sleeves, a round neck, and three stripes on the skirt.
It itches, I told my mother after she'd made me try it on.
It can't, Mom said. It's acrylic, not wool. I wiggled around.
It itches all over.
There's probably a scratchy tag inside. I'll take it out later.
When Mom and Dad came into my room to kiss me goodnight, Mom said,
Did you put the tooth under your pillow?
I patted my pillow and said, Of course.
I hope the tooth fairy comes, Dad said.
Me too. Do you think she could leave me a check this time instead of cash?
A check? Mom asked.
Yes.
I twisted the edge of my blanket. Made out to the Winthrop Stamp Company for $2.87.
That's a lot of money for one little tooth, Dad said.
I know it, I told him, but I haven't got many baby teeth left, and I'm sure the tooth fairy will understand if you explain it to her.
Mom and Dad looked at each other.
We'll try to get the message through, Mom said. Now go to sleep.
The next morning I felt under my pillow. The tooth was gone, and in its place was the check I'd asked for. I found Dad in the kitchen, squeezing oranges, and I thanked him. Then I went looking for Mom. I heard the water running in her bathroom. I figured she was washing up, so I tried the door. It was unlocked.
Mom, thanks for the...
I stopped right in the middle. Mom wasn't at the sink. She was crouched in the corner of the bathroom, smoking a cigarette.
Mom, what are you doing?
My mom tossed the button to the toilet. Then she stood up and fanned the air, trying to get rid of the smoke.
I couldn't help it, she said. I really needed one this morning.
You promised, I began.
I promised to try, and I am trying.
But...
My mother held up her hand. Please get ready for school. I have a very busy day coming up, and I don't have the time to drive you if you miss your bus.
Oh, that reminds me, I said. I have to stay after school today.
Well, this is a fine time to tell me, Mom said as she pulled on her pantyhose.
I forgot to tell you last night because I was so busy trying on the dress and thinking about my tooth and all.
Damn, Mom said. I just gotta run. Now I'll have to wear pants.
And anyway, the whole class has to stay after. Why?
Oh, we were fooling around in music.
Mom went to her closet.
Damn again, they're at the cleaners.
I'll get a ride home with one of the mothers, so don't worry.
You're sure? Mom asked, looking for another pair of pantyhose.
Because I could call a taxi.
Oh, no, Wendy said either her mother or Caroline's will drop me off.
Leave a note for Mrs. Sandmeyer.
I will.
On the way to school, I told Tracy about my check, and that now I have enough to buy a whole bunch of approvals from Winthrop. When Tracy heard that, she started wiggling both of her loose teeth.
Chapter 9. So who won the game?
Mrs. Minish told us to hurry and settle down as we walked into our room, because she had to collect the money for our class trip. We're going to the planetarium next month. I've already been there 4 times. I knew it would take Mrs. Minish forever to get our trip money straight, so I pulled my chair over to Wendy's desk. She and Caroline had a couple of books spread out in front of them to make it look like they were hard at work on some assignment, but really they were making up a list. They showed it to me.
How to have fun with blubber.
1. Hold your nose when blubber walks by.
2.
Trip her.
3.
Push her.
4.
Shove her.
5.
Pinch her.
6.
Make her say, I am Blubber, the smelly whale of Class 206. Before I'd had a chance to read the whole thing, the office called on the intercom, asking for a messenger from our class, and Mrs. Minish looked up and said, Jill, will you run down to the office, please? Ms. Valdez, that's what the clerk likes to be called, handed me a notice that had to be signed by all the 5th grade teachers. By the time I got back to our room, my class was saying the Pledge of Allegiance. I waited outside the door until they were through. Bruce picked his nose the whole time, which wasn't a very patriotic thing to do. After that, it was time to line up for gym. I like Mr. Witneski, our gym teacher. He treats the girls the same as the boys. This time of year, we usually play kickball. I have this great daydream where it's the bottom of the last inning and my team has 2 outs with the bases loaded. We are losing by 3 runs and I'm up. When the ball comes rolling toward me, I kick it so hard and so fast that it goes way into the outfield over everyone's head. It's a home run and we win the game. My whole team starts yelling and cheering, and then they pick me up and carry me around on their shoulders, and after that, I'm always the first one picked for a team. So far, this has never happened, but I keep hoping it will. While we were walking down the hall, Caroline whispered, "You missed a good show. When Blubber went up to give Minish her money, Wendy stuck out her foot and tripped her, and Blubber fell flat on her face, and Minish said, 'From now on, try to be more careful, Linda.'"
What did Blubber say to that?
Nothing. What do you think?
I called Tracy as soon as I got home from school.
"What did Miss Rothbell make you do?" she asked.
"We had to write, 'I was very rude yesterday. I will not misbehave in music again.'"
"How many times?"
100.
Ugh!
You can say that again. Did you hear about Jim?
No, what?
Well, Michael and Rochelle were captains.
Yeah.
And I was on Michael's team, and Wendy and Blubber were on Rochelle's. Blubber was the last one picked.
That figures.
So, on my first time up, I kicked a blooper right at Blubber. Not on purpose or anything, it just happened, you know?
Yeah.
And probably anyone else would have just caught it, and I'd have been out. But Blubber missed the ball.
And fell over backwards.
Tracy laughed. So then Wendy started yelling at Blubber, "You dummy, you idiot, you smelly whale," because Wendy really likes to win.
I know.
So then Blubber started bawling, "It's not my fault," and she grabbed her belly and groaned, "She hit me right in the stomach, oh!"
Then what? Tracy asked.
So Mr. Witneski dashed out to the field and said, "Are you hurt, Linda?" which made Blubber start crying harder. She sounded like a sick elephant, and the whole time she kept telling Mr. Witneski that I did it on purpose, that I aimed right for her, as if I could just kick the ball wherever I wanted.
"Fat chance," Tracy said, which is what I told Mr. Witneski.
Did he believe you?
I'm not sure, because then he turned to me, of all people, and I was already safe at second base, and he said, "Jill, take Linda down to see the nurse, please."
Oh, no!
Oh, yes, but I told him, "Mr. Witneski, I'm on base."
So he didn't make you go?
Wrong! He said, "Someone can run for you." And next thing I know, Caroline was sent in to take my place, and I was stuck walking the smelly whale to the nurse's office.
Go on, go on.
Well, first thing she says is, "Why do you always pick on me?" So I tell her, "I don't pick on you." And she goes, "You do too, you and all your friends, and I never did anything to you." So I tell her, "You're full of it." And she goes, "Someday you'll be sorry. I'll get you for this." So I tell her, "I'm really scared." And she goes, "You should be." So I say, "Yeah, I'm shaking all over." And then she goes, "I hate you."
"She really said that?" Tracy asked.
"Yep." So then we get to the nurse's office, and she starts bawling all over again, and the nurse asks her where it hurts, and Blubber tells her, "In my stomach." And the nurse makes her lie down on the cot and pops the thermometer in her mouth, even though I say, "She got hit with a ball. She doesn't have a temperature." But the nurse doesn't care what I say, because she likes to stick thermometers in people's mouths, which I happen to know because of that time I sprained my finger, and the first thing she did was take my temperature. So while the thermometer is in Blubber's mouth and she can't talk, I ask the nurse, "Can I go now?" And she tells me, "Yes, dear, and thank you for bringing her."
"So who won the game?" Tracy asked.
"Them. 2-10.
That night I struggled over my math homework for an hour. I should be great at math since my father is a tax lawyer and my mother works with computers. I don't understand why I have such a hard time with word problems. Dad explained 3 of them to me, but he doesn't set the problems up the way we're supposed to, so even though I got the right answers, I knew Mrs. Minish would still mark some of them wrong.
but I'd done my best, and Mom and Dad always say that's what counts. The next morning, when Linda got on the bus, she stood next to my seat and said, "You should see my stomach. It's all black and blue." "I'll bet. It is. My mother had to take me to the doctor." "So?" "He said you knocked the wind out of me." "I knew I smelled something bad yesterday." I turned to Tracy and the two of us absolutely cracked up. I guess nobody ever told Linda about laughing it off. Right after group science, Mrs. Minish told the girls to line up alphabetically. "We're going to the nurse's office to get weighed." Everybody groaned. We get weighed every fall and again every spring. If I had known that today was the day, I'd have eaten a huge breakfast and worn my fisherman's sweater. It's the heaviest thing I own. I was first on line, with Donna Davidson right behind me and Linda behind her. Wendy and Caroline were near the end of the line, since their names start with R and T. When we got to the office, the nurse said, "Take off your shoes, please." Then she called, "Jill Brenner." "Right here," I said. I didn't take off my sneakers. I was hoping that the nurse wouldn't notice. Then I'd weigh 2 pounds more, and she wouldn't be able to give me a lecture about being underweight and how I should drink Maltids every day. "Please take off your shoes, Jill." "I can't." She gave me a funny look. "Why not?" "I promised my mother I wouldn't. My feet get cold when I go barefoot."
"It will be only for a minute."
"I'll get sick if I do."
"Jill, stop being silly and take off your shoes."
"Oh." I kicked off my sneakers and stepped on the scale. I hoped it was at least 5 pounds overweight.
"Hmm," the nurse said, wiggling the marker all around. 67 and a half.
I smiled at her to show I was pleased. She checked the chart. "That's not much of a gain, only 0.5 pound since last spring."
"Well," I told her, "I guess I'm just lucky because I'm always eating."
"You should try to build yourself up. I'd like to see you weigh about 72. Why don't you start drinking a Malted every day?"
"Okay," I said, stepping off the scale. I have never had a Malted in my life, but what the nurse doesn't know won't hurt her.
The nurse was pleased with Donna Davidson. She has one of those perfect bodies where everything fits the way it should. Linda was next. I took a long time getting my shoes back on, so I heard everything.
"Are you feeling better, Linda?" the nurse asked.
"Yes."
"Good. Now, let's see. Oh, my, 91 pounds. That's too much for your height."
"I have big bones," Linda said.
"Even so, according to my chart, you should lose some weight."
"But I'm on a diet."
"Well, that's a step in the right direction. Remember, no sweets."
"I know it."
After lunch, we went outside to jump rope, and Donna taught everyone this jumping rhyme she used to sing to the fattest counselor at her summer horse camp. "Oh, what a riot! Blubber's on a diet! I wonder what's the matter! I think she's getting fatter and fatter and fatter and fatter! Pop!" Bruce seemed to enjoy jumping to Donna's rhyme best of all. It suits him even more than Linda, because he weighs over 100 pounds, and when he jumps, his whole body shakes like jello. He's the one who should be on a diet. Linda didn't wait her turn on line. She ran back inside and didn't come out at all during recess. Chapter 10. Not crazy, just different.
"I think you should know that Mr. Machinist is showing everybody in Hidden Valley those pictures he took of you on Halloween night." Wendy told this to me and Tracy on the way home from school. She and Caroline were sitting opposite us on the bus. Me and Tracy looked at each other. We'd forgotten all about that.
"But don't worry," Wendy said. "He only got the back of you, and with the pillowcases over your heads, nobody will ever be able to identify you."
"You saw the pictures?" I asked.
"Last night. He brought them over himself."
Caroline said, "When he came to my house, I told him I didn't know who you were, even though Tracy's feathers were hanging out."
"You could see my feathers?" Tracy asked.
"It's all right," Wendy said, and she gave Caroline a look that made her shut her mouth and turn to the window. "Nobody's going to say anything, believe me."
It's important to be Wendy's friend, I thought.
I only hope that what she says is true. When we got off the bus, me and Tracy stopped at our mailboxes the way we do every day. I got a letter from the Superior Stamp Company, probably the approvals I sent for last month, I thought. "You don't think Mr. Machinist will find out who we are, do you?" Tracy asked. "Definitely not," I told her. "You heard Wendy." "I guess you're right. But from now on, every time my doorbell rings, I'm going to faint." "Me too." "Listen, I'll call you later. I've got to go to the dentist this afternoon."
"Maybe he can pull out your loose teeth and then you can ask for a check."
"Maybe."
"Good luck."
"Thanks," Tracy said. "I'll need it." As soon as I walked into the house, Kenny said,
"Guess what? Mrs. Sandmeyer's going to Switzerland on Saturday."
I dropped the mail on the hall table and ran into the kitchen.
"It's not true," I said. "You wouldn't leave us."
Mrs. Sandmeyer put her arm around me. Now, it's only for 3 weeks.
3 weeks? We can't live without you for 3 weeks.
Of course you can.
But who'll take care of us?
I asked.
Oh, your mother and father will think of something. I don't see why you can't wait until summer when we're away at camp.
Because my mother's going to be 85, Mrs. Sandmeyer said, and I want to be there for her birthday.
Your mother? I never knew you had a mother.
Everybody has a mother, Kenny said. I shot him a look. You know what I mean, I told Mrs. Sandmeyer. I never thought of her as somebody's daughter. Mama's a wonderful woman. She lives with my sister in Zurich, and I just decided I don't want to miss this birthday.
I'll bet they